RCR with Paul Brennan.
It's time for our first catch-up with New Zealand First leader, Foreign Minister, Deputy Prime Minister and leader of New Zealand First in 2025. Hi, Winston. Welcome back to RCR.
Hello, and thank you, and good day or evening to your audience.
Thank you. I want to fire through quite a few things, and I know time is tight. The polls. Two new political polls showing the left bloc has the numbers to form a government if an election was held today. Why do you think that is? Can you explain those poll results, two of them?
Look, I've had a long career looking at these polls. I've got a political science degree, but also decades of experience in politics, and our polls are the worst in the world because there are huge gaps in them which don't exist in other first world democracies. When they have a 3% spread, they start to talk to each other about what's gone wrong. I've seen 14% spreads in this country, and everybody argues they're right. So I don't have a great deal of time for the polls, and that's a consistent position. I don't comment on them.
Okay. With Trump's win, surely I would have expected maybe to see this time round, but maybe next time round, a bump for New Zealand First, because there are kind of, it feels to be similarities.
Oh, look, the best bump we've got, if you're talking about polls, is one that says that we're on about 8.9. And also in terms of the leadership of the alternative prime minister. But none of those things are concerning my team. Strategically, we have a plan to lift things month by month as we go forward. And that plan's right on target now.
I want to get to a few of the current issues. The investor visa, changes to business investor visa announced. How do you think that's going down out there?
Well, look, the reality is we were in 2019 on $2.2 billion, which with their changes and reconfiguration in 2021, under Labor by themselves, saw it sink to $70 million, down from $2.2 billion. And the numbers were barely over 30 individual people of that character when there should have been hundreds. So it was a massive failure, and I don't know why they're complaining, because if they weren't going to change it, a policy that's failed that bad, then we needed to, and we're doing so.
Do we need the money? Is it that tight?
We've always needed the money. Going back to Vogel's time in the late 1800s, we've always needed the money. And we, as you know, have had in the past attempts to have a saving scheme. First, the Kirk government, 74, 72, 75, tried it. That got overturned by the national government coming in under Muldoon. I tried a referendum, you recall, in 1996, 97, and it was going to be you will get a tax break of 8%, and you can save that, and you'll have it all personalised. And that in the referendum was voted down. Now, they might have voted me down, but they didn't vote away the problem, and here we are now, desperately needing money. And yes, the answer to your question is, do we need money? Yes, we do. But we need it for production, wealth creation, added value, and exports, not for consumption.
Just a little thought experiment. What sort of position would we be in if we'd done all that back in the day, do you think, now, all these years later, decades later?
We'd be heading forward towards a trillion. And it's sad, you know, because basically the Kirk idea, 72, 75, was a good idea, excepting you didn't get full payment until well into the 2020s, our decade, because if you were starting off young. And women were largely left out. But those defects could have been fixed up rather than get rid of the whole scheme. That's the sad thing about it. I tried again on the basis, it'll be painless. I'll give you the tax cut. You save it. It'll be personalised. And if you die, you won't be just swept up by the general system. You can image that by your will or your codicil or whatever contract you have with your family to go to the family. All that was voted down in a political argument between sectors of the National Party, sad to say, when in fact people like Roger Douglas were saying it was a no-brainer. It's rather sad how politics can be sometimes.
New Zealand First introducing a bill to fine woke banks, $500,000. What spurred you into doing this, and what is the definition of a woke bank?
It's a bank that decides that certain industries it doesn't like, even though they're perfectly legal, they are part of the statutory and legal entitlements of business in New Zealand, but they themselves, foreign owned as they are, will make up the mind as to who can do what in New Zealand. And the answer to that is, if you don't like what the laws are in this country, you can go overseas, you can leave. But we're not going to have you control our banking system in this country. You, of course, having said you don't like certain things like extraction, or you don't like oil or mining or what have you, you nevertheless, you're still taking all the weekly and salary payments of the people who are engaged in it. And so you see how conflated they are. And we just said, look, enough of that. And like somebody just recently said in the United States, we're going to get banks to get back to doing what they should do, banking, and not making philosophic, ideological statements.
Using that logic, you wouldn't bank here in New Zealand, would you? And they emit a lot of stuff into the atmosphere on the logic of the coal. I'm just making that comparison.
No, but you're making out the bank's argument. And I'm saying to the banks, so when you get to go
Well, it's an
between,
insane argument, is really what I'm trying to
yeah, but when you
go.
try to go between your own banks or internationally, you're going to go by canoe or walker or sailing ship, are you? No, you hypocrites. Stop trying to mislead people.
Regarding fluoride, have you personally accepted a petition? Over 20,000 signatures, I understand, to restore decision-making power to local communities regarding fluoridation of their drinking water. You've met with Michael Connett. He's been a guest here. Of course, he won the case against fluoridation in the States. Plenty of detail there, not the time to go into it. What tipped you into this now? Because obviously, this is something that a lot of our audience is concerned with, particularly the rights aspect of it and medicating water supplies in a compulsory fashion. So, what got you now pushing for a members' bill? This has just all of a sudden been announced.
Well, it was always our position in this country to ask the local bodies, local body by local body, ask all the ratepayers what they wanted, that it was a matter of democratic decision-making, not made up and decided by bureaucrats in Wellington. Then in 2021, they flipped that, the Labor Party, by themselves in a dictatorial and despotic way and said, we're going to take that right off you. Now we're going to impose this duty. And if you don't oblige, then there's going to be a $200,000 fine initially, and then a $10,000 fine every day that you have not complied. You see what's happening here? And we're saying, no, you don't. We're going to put it back to the people of this country, and they will decide local government by local government.
What does it say about the attitude of our previous and current Director General of Health, Winston? It seems very authoritarian and kind of tyrannical in the approach. Is that, part of the job brief, do you think?
Well, if you're going to blame that person, you've got to ask on what power or authority is she acting? And she's acting under the authority and the power given in the 2021 Jacinda Ardern-led government by themselves legislation. So you can't blame her for enforcing the law that she's been.
So she has no discretion because you can't poison people, even if it's legal, can you?
She doesn't have any discretion. That's what's going wrong here. So everybody focuses on the individual doing what the statute requires of them. They don't focus on the defective, should be soon defunct statute and correct that in the first place. But that's so typical of life where people get the wrong target.
Cook Islands, the Prime Minister there, Mark Brown, off to China. Don't know if he's gone. Maybe he's about to set off. To sign a comprehensive strategic partnership, we have it reported here from Radio New Zealand, without consulting New Zealand on its contents. Was he obliged to?
He was obliged to, under the Dr. Mamate-led Cook Islands government in 2020 and 2001. Sorry, in 2001. It's very getting complicated these
It
days.
all dissolves
In
away, doesn't it?
2001, Dr. Mamate, Prime Minister of the Cook Islands, and Helen Clark, Prime Minister of New Zealand, entered this very, very detailed arrangement about our future constitutional cooperation. Yes, he is obliged to. It's all laid out there in the first six clauses. And thank heavens today, Helen Clark came out and backed our interpretation of it and said that what we were doing is right. Because of our responsibility to the Cook Island people, as I tried to stress to the Cook Island government, we are bound to consult with the diaspora of Cook Islanders in the Cook Islands or internationally, because it's their rights that are being attacked here or are going to be denuded here if there is a substantial change. And so, whatever they might want to do from the government's point of view, we are controlled by our constitutional obligations, and that's what I cannot, and this government can't afford to fail on. And I think across the political divide, you'll see they'll understand that as well.
And the role of China in this, is that just opportunistic? Was someone napping and not realizing that it was getting that cozy?
No, we weren't napping. We've been in a long dialogue requesting information, and it wasn't us that went public, it was Prime Minister Mark Brown, who began by saying he wanted a separate passport. Well, immediately our statement was, well, if that's the case, then the New Zealand passport will not be available because you can't have two under our arrangements. And going all the years back since we've been part of the Cook Islands history, so to speak. From 1901, we've been building our relationship up, and the passport access, the same passport, the same citizenship, the same access to health systems. This is all available to them. But if you're going to change the constitutional position, our message to Mark Brown, Prime Minister of Cook Islands, was, then there will be other changes. And have you spoken to your people? Have the Cook Island people and the Cook Island Parliament discussed this? And the answer is no. So it's sad that we've got to this situation, but we'll work our way through it on the basis, as Helen Clark came out today and agreed, of the 2001 Clark-Moate Agreement at that time, which
Not
we.
consulting your people sounds a little sneaky.
Well, you see, you're asking me to make judgments, and I don't want to do that because
No, fair enough, but it sounds
we're
that
in diplomacy,
way.
and sometimes things that are not said are better left that way.
Okay. Quickly, I've only got a few minutes left. Ukraine and maybe Gaza as well. Volodymyr Zelensky came out about a week ago and said he didn't know where over $100 billion of the nearly $160 billion Ukraine has received has gone. We've thrown in over 100 million. Do we know where the money we've given them has gone, who's received it, and it's accounted for?
Yes, we do, and with precision. And I can tell you that the new Secretary General, the new Defense Secretary of the United States, has been very praiseworthy of our efforts, particularly of our army and how great they were in their top-class training of those Ukrainian soldiers.
Many of those soldiers are probably dead now, by the way.
Well, that's the sad thing, because they came under attack. And you remember then the beginnings of the freedom of Ukraine in the 1990s. There was agreement between Russia and the Ukraine. They even denuclearized the military speaking, denuclearized as a consequence of that. And it's all gone back on by Russia, and they invaded them. Of course, they did that at first in war in Crimea, and the West did not act. Then they did it the second time, and the West is acting now. And
And Russia's won, right? They've won it.
no, they
It's
have
pretty
not.
clear.
No, they have not won. The point is, this should have been a war of a few weeks. It is now in its third year that they
No, I
have
know.
won.
Yeah. Been following the battles. They've won every single battle.
Well, you might say that, but the NATO has now stiffened up big time. Of the NATO members, 20 of them are past 2% in terms of defense spending, and some are past 5%. They're stepping up to ensure that this does not happen to them. And so I know that there's a certain people having a certain narrative. But you would know as well as I that no way Putin ever thought he'd still be in this war, even in the
Oh, he
defense.
thought people would negotiate and they'd come to a deal, and maybe that was a surprise to him. I don't know, but
Maybe he will just have to negotiate very soon, won't he?
do you support the moves on Gaza as well? Quickly, I know that sort
Well,
of.
by the way, I must tell you, I'm very sad to see what happened to Russia because they were breaking into a new era when, we could see they had a potential of being a new Russia with a very great economy. And many of the countries around the world wanted to be part of it. And some of the programs we're working on to make them food self-sufficient, some of us were extensively working on that until this latest engagement.
We
And
could do
then,
another Butterfilada deal, Winston.
well, of course, we're stepping up on that.
I just remember the day, that's all.
You know all the jokes about the larder, don't you?
I used to go past their storage facility every day. I'm well aware of them on the way to school, believe it or not. I mentioned Gaza. It's kind of crazy proposition Trump's put out there, the Riviera of the Middle East, though that it starts to move things, doesn't it?
Well, everybody says that now, but here's the point. How do you rebuild a place when you've got people in the way? And the Christchurch earthquake was our sort of minuscule example of that. People had to go before you can get the job done. And so he says something that can sound like common sense in practical terms, and you've got the whole world gives their view from on high, many of whom have no intention of being part of the rebuild. So I'm just sitting here and saying the wise thing for us to do is to wait and see how these ideas develop.
Yep. Final question, RSE in schools. What progress has been made removing relationship and sex ed from schools as per the coalition agreement? Nothing has changed at the local secondary school where I am, in the South Island, I am told. So this is a very serious matter to many parents. Is the Education Minister, Erica Stanford, doing nothing or what?
We've acted on puberty blockers. We're acting on sport. We're saying that women's sport is not an accident. Women have sports because they have different gender. They need their own sports organizations. They need a thing called fairness. And we're not going to allow it to go on, and we're taking our time to push it through. A lot of people think that despite the government having won, the policy doesn't matter, but we remind that that does. And yes, we're going to keep on pressing on every sector where the commitments we made at the last election are going to be abided by, because we have a democratic mandate to do that.
Just a quick thought on the phase two COVID inquiry underway now. Anything to say about that at this stage?
Well, the reality is will be far more comprehensive. It will get to the question, and it's explained in far bigger words than just the word efficacy, because we've set out what does it mean in this inquiry, what efficacy does mean. And we want to know the truth so that next time the public will be better informed. The Mitchell inquiry, if you had any, how shall I put it, sense of belief in getting a proper inquiry, you'd have never accepted to be on the inquiry because the terms of reference were utterly inadequate. We've sought to fix that.
All right, Winston, thank you for coming back on RCR. Talk again soon. Plenty of issues around. We'll
Yes.
keep an eye on the polls.
Yes.
So I look forward to another
Well, look,
chat.
as I explained to TV1 today, who was bang on about the polls, I said I could win into election once. It's 2002. You got us on 1.8, and we were on 10.8. You see, you had to put up a 1,000-point difference, and you still have stand in front of me, not educated in this matter, not informed in this matter, no experience in the matter, ramming your silly poll down my throat. And I think you're just misleading the public.
But wait, there's more. When I talked to Winston, the interview you just saw, which was on Tuesday late afternoon, we ran out of time and I didn't get to his comments, because I'm going to ask him about it, regarding the gene technology bill and whether New Zealand First supports it. Winston, thanks for coming back to answer this question, which is very important to our audience. And that is the gene technology bill. It's a coalition agreement to liberalize genetic engineering laws. Though it does say, while ensuring strong protections for human health and the environment. Are you comfortable with this liberalization?
Well, look, the real essential here is, and it's not a cop-out, but we do have a select committee process where the public can make submissions, and we should be listening to good submissions and paying attention to new evidence. Remember, there was a methane inhibitor that came out of the UK, and it sounded fantastic until we got a massive consumer kickback because there were worries about it. Now, there's no use going down that pathway if you get that response, and also in your trading partners, you get comments like, well, if that's the case, we will not be buying your product. So we're going to be ultra careful. What New Zealand First is saying is, and we put all these caveats in when we brought the bill in, New Zealand First said, yes, we're wanting progress, but we also have for decades had a view, be ultra cautious about these matters. As a consequence, we're going to look at the Select Committee process. We're going to hear people out. And I've had submissions myself more than any other bill of late, where I've looked in them to see what is the long-term answer, because we've got to make progress if we can. But we don't want three-eyed fish as a consequence, do we?
Yeah, there's a lot of evidence to suggest that there aren't too many success stories in the space, particularly with agriculture. Medicine is being sold differently. I guess why people are very nervous about this, obviously the and I think Mark Patterson, one of your MPs, described it as first mover advantage in the space we're in at the moment. But also, we had a gene product unleashed upon us. It was claimed to be safe and effective. It wasn't tested properly. There's an inquiry into it now. It has, some would say, been a disaster. That is an incredible warning, isn't it, that?
Well, on all these things, it is a warning. But if you've got to look at medical science, things were thought of in the past that was regarded as impossible. And also in horticulture, we've seen all sorts of advances there. And we've been at the very cutting edge of it. We're the ones, for example, took a thing called Chinese gooseberry, and we turned it into green kiwi fruit. And when it got hit with a huge disease, we turned it to golden kiwi fruit. We just made great advances. And that's what New Zealand's skills are. But be darn careful before you move, because some of these things become irreversible.
I mentioned strong protections for human health and the environment, which is mentioned. The bill, many would argue, doesn't do that at all. And I'm wondering how far it will be supported by New Zealand First, what committee stages, next reading? What's the thinking? Can you tell
Oh,
us?
look, we want to make progress, but thank God Mark Patterson, in the introduction of this bill, said there are certain caveats we want answered, and select committee process should be real. We don't want to stop the world. We want to get off this. The Greens do, and everybody else. They don't want to go anywhere in advancing these matters. But it's wise to know what you're dealing with and make sure that things land. And you've seen it so often in medicine where they've tried certain treatments, and the thalidomide and all those things were a disaster as a consequence of a lack of caution on the way through. We are not saying no. What we're saying is let's be absolutely certain where we're going here, and the protection of the environment, the marketplace, and consumers, and our trade relations are critical things as well.
The level of vigilance, last question, because I can remember last year seeing the Prime Minister and the Science Minister at the time, she's not now, but the Attorney General, and then David Seymour in white lab coats, which looked like they'd never worn before, kind of promoting this, which is not their role to do. So, people are probably quite rightly suspicious that they might not be listened to.
Well, of course, people will always be suspicious, and most of those suspicions are based on past experience of so-called progress, which wasn't progress, it was actually adverse to them. And so people have got a right to be suspicious. But be that being the case, the wonders of modern science tell us that we can make progress. I haven't got the answer for you. I hope the select committee process, in its serious intensity and depth, does have the and find the answers for us. But make no bones about it. Some of these things, in terms of expanding their food capacity in a population worldwide going forward that needs 40% or more production now, these sort of things are critically important. So, how shall I say it? Let's make up our mind on the evidence we see, not just from where we started from.
Winston, thanks for coming back on, clarifying that. Look forward to our next chat whenever that might be. Thank you.
Thank you.